This is the Education Exchange with Paul Peterson. I am the senior editor at Education Next. Thank you for joining us. Well, as the pandemic is coming to an end, at least we hope, high school graduation rates are tumbling. Community college enrollments are falling. And commentators are questioning whether the cost and benefits of an academic degree are in alignment. Young people today, it is said by many business leaders, young people today want to prepare themselves to enter the workforce, but schools aren't providing them with the instructional opportunities and the relationships that they need. Recently, the Pioneer Institute in Boston, Massachusetts, released a report on two vocational schools, one in Worcester, the other in Springfield, Massachusetts. Both have upgraded their vocational education programs in ways that high school students have found compelling. To discuss the Pioneer Report and the broader question of the transition from high school into the workforce, I have with me on the Education Exchange today, Payman Ruhanifar, former superintendent of schools in Camden, New Jersey, and co-founder of Propel America, a nonprofit dedicated to providing a second chance for young adults. So thank you, Payman, for joining me on the Education Exchange.
It is always good to be with you.
Well, Payman, when schools and colleges close their doors and asked young people to wear masks in school, when they opened them, many young people just decided to go to work instead. Is this a tragedy, or is this really a good thing for people to enter into the workforce early on?
I think the answer is somewhere in the middle. I would argue it's not a tragedy in that you see wages going up in the labor market, and a lot of young people have a hard time with the opportunity cost of traditional higher ed and just the challenges of forestalling income for a significant period of time when they can go and get a living wage job right now. And so to your point, we've seen that trend play out in a very significant way since the pandemic and overall post-secondary enrollment being down roughly 10%. But it's the answer is in the middle, because while it's a good thing in that they're in a living wage job, the question is that a job that leads to mobility? And I think there's a big question mark there. I think a lot of young people are in entry-level jobs that don't afford that opportunity. It may pay the bills right now, but what happens down the road?
Well, in this changing market where unemployment rates are declining, what is the role that Propel America plays? I can understand this in the world when jobs are scarce, but now jobs are quite plentiful. What's the role of an organization that's trying to bridge the gap?
Propel has created a model that we call Jobs First Higher Education. And so what that means for us and our students is that in 6 months or less, with nothing out of pocket, in fact, you get a modest stipend during that time, you are in a living wage job via an industry-recognized credential that you get college credit for, roughly a college semester's worth of college credit, that you can stack into a higher degree if you want to pursue an associate or bachelor's degree. And so we think that's really critical, that you're both in a living wage job that involves an experience that allows you to create mobility. And one way to create mobility is to have college credits in your back pocket and to also be in a job in which you can career ladder and use those credits in pursuit of a higher position.
So what is it that students need as they leave high school? I thought, you know, you get a high school, you get a diploma, you should be ready for the labor force. What is it that high schools are not teaching kids that organizations such as Propel America can provide?
Well, I can tell you from having spent over a decade inside of school systems, they are not focused on connecting young people to jobs, full stop. There are certainly exceptions to that rule, but few and far between. At the end of the day, our secondary systems in America are compliance oriented in the sense that they're there to graduate students. And so once they check the box on transcript and any testing requirements, in many respects, they wipe their hands clean. And young people are then left in a little bit of a void. We have a semblance of a college for all model here, where the choice most young people make, because it's really the only choice put in front of them, is to go to traditional higher ed, either a two-year or four-year institution. But there is nary a connection to an actual living wage job that leads to mobility. And all the work, to your question, that goes into thriving in that job, the professional skills you need, the competencies, the mindsets, the skills you need to be successful in a job, those are not skills that are delivered in our secondary system.
Well, I understand that, you know, that's true of higher education, the four-year college, the, you know, Harvard's or state universities or whatever, but aren't community colleges supposed to be exactly that kind of interstitial institution that is connected to the world of work that will help students get the professional skill set that they need in order to find a job?
Well, that's what they were founded to do in the 20th century, mid-20th century. That's what they were founded to do, and that is not what they are doing today. Again, there are exceptions to the rule, but by and large, community colleges are chasing enrollment, because enrollment means revenue, and they put young people on a track to pursue some general studies major that, as their pitch goes to young people, that then allows them to transfer to a four-year institution. Many community colleges have partnerships with four-year institutions. When you look at the actual data, low single-digit percentage of those students end up ultimately completing an associate's degree, and even fewer enroll in a four-year college and complete a four-year degree. And so their original mandate to be that connective tissue to the employer community, the local economy, that is just not what is playing out today in our country. And it does need to change. There are some examples of new efforts that where institutions are building a better bridge to actual employment, but that is unfortunately not the reality that we need for our young people right now.
So what does Propel America do, or with your partner organizations, what do you do that these community colleges and these high schools are not doing?
Well, we partner with training organizations. So these are accredited institutions of higher education that do the work of workforce credentialing connected to high wage, high growth jobs. And we've essentially created a coalition of the willing that are the exceptions to the rule. So we have a national higher ed partner, coincidentally called National Lewis University, which is originally a school of education that became a four-year college as well, roughly 100 years ago, based in Chicago. They have a lovely campus in the heart of the city in the Loop, but they also have a virtual component which allows us to use them as a partner to train our young people no matter where they are. And we also have a few community college partners that have very functioning workforce credentialing programs that generate college credits for our students that they accept into higher degrees. And so we're trying to broaden that tent and have more partners. And so while our students, by the way, are getting that credential, the work of Propel is to coach our students and instill in them the professional skills they need to be successful. So communication, teamwork, confidence, all the things that employers frankly point to even more than technical skills when it comes to entry-level jobs. And that's a real pain point that employers across the country feel right now.
Well, how are you providing that kind of training in these professional skills, these communication skills, these personal demeanor skill sets that are so important for getting a job and holding a job?
So we recruit students across high school partnerships we have, but also we do community-wide recruiting for students up to 24 years of age. Once they've matriculated with us, they formally enroll in one of our training partners, be it a local community college or a national partner. The instruction, for the most part, is delivered virtually. And then we coach the students in two formats. One is a weekly cohort meeting, roughly 2 hours once a week, in groups no bigger than 12 to 15. And they also get a one-on-one session once a week as well, roughly an hour. And we hire full-time trained coaches that support our young people through a scripted curriculum we have that focuses on confidence. Who am I? What are my strengths? You know, what am I good at? And then being cognizant of sort of the areas that you need to get better at. Two, competence, which relates to problem solving and technical skills. Problem solving, of course, is a much bigger animal here. Technical skills refers to the skills you're going to need that relate to your credential. Third is collaboration. So teamwork, in essence, and the work that pretty much every job in our country requires as you work cross-functionally in many settings. And then communication, whether it's verbal or written, the necessary customer service that comes into many roles that are external and customer-facing. So we train them in that specific curriculum. It's done heavily through a cohort model where they support our young people, who many of whom have very similar life experiences coming in. They support one another and sort of build a bond through that process. And then we do a lot of technical work to get them ready to submit a cover letter and a resume and to be ready for their interview. And so all of that comes over the course of roughly 16 weeks. Some of our programs are closer to 6 months. And so they can get that job and persist, and that's a really important part, persist in the job for at least a year.
I suppose it's a lot depends on the particular industry or particular line of work that you're going into as to exactly what you need and so forth. So do you have some specific occupational ladders that you find where you're concentrating your efforts?
We began training and supporting young people in various industry verticals when we first started. So we're a young organization. When we were in pilot mode, we had various verticals across advanced manufacturing, IT, skill trades, and healthcare. And these are ones that were picked intentionally after studying labor market data. These pathways that we handpicked are higher wage and in industries that are growing and allow for more mobility. And after a couple of years of piloting, we decided that we want to focus in one sector, which is healthcare, to create greater operational focus and simplicity for our model as we continue to scale. We also picked healthcare intentionally because in the wake of a pandemic, certainly that put a lot of strain on our healthcare system and just broader societal recognition of the importance of our healthcare system and to increase talent density and to bring young people into important jobs in healthcare. Secondly, it's the largest swath of the economy. And it's a fast-growing sector. It's been growing at 7% a year, so it's one where you can have a lot of security in your job. Last thing I'll quickly say is there's very little NGO activity in healthcare. There's I think a lot of innovation happening in IT specifically, but less so in healthcare. And so, for all those reasons, we have put a flag in healthcare, we work both in traditional healthcare delivery systems, big hospital chains, but also behavioral health and companies that are supporting families and young people with autism spectrum disorder, for example. One of our jobs is called registered behavioral technician. So we're also in that space as well.
So this is really important and critical work that you're doing. Do you have any metrics? Do you have any, how effective are you? Is it too early to come up with some numbers? I know people who are engaged in this business always have to come up with some data to say that we're doing what we say we're doing.
We have three critical metrics with some leading indicators on top. So program completion, so training completion rate. Some of the leading indicators there are like how they're doing in their courses before they complete the credential. So that's one. Second would be job attainment. So did they get the offer? And then third would be job persistence. And we're a little bit early in since our founding to look at job persistence. But when you look at training completion rate and job placement rates, we are around what we have targeted to do. So our goal for program completion is 75%. And we're a little bit north of that right now. We're between 75 and 80. And for job placement, our goal is 75% again, and we're slightly below that. There have been, I think we're roughly 68% right now. There have been some disruptions in hiring over the course of the last couple of years, as you can imagine, especially in healthcare. A lot of apprenticeships and other entry-level jobs were put off as hospitals were triaging to serve COVID patients, and a lot of training programs also shut down over the course of that time period. And so there's some noise in our data, but we're tracking near where our goals are.
Well, let's shift and talk about traditional vocational education, because if you go back into American history, this problem has not been invented in the last 10 years. This goes back to the early part of the 20th century, that business leaders said we need to have a better connection between education and work. We need to have vocational education in our high schools. And vocational education was established in our high schools. Almost every comprehensive high school in the country had a very extended vocational education training program. Why wasn't this problem solved a long time ago?
Well, the way I think of it is pendulum swing. And there became a movement, not necessarily a focused one, but I think over time there was a growing belief that vocational education is a lesser than option. And so therefore we need to hold high expectations for all young people to then enroll in traditional higher ed, because that is the ticket to the American dream. That is what leads to prosperity and mobility. And by the way, that's well-intentioned. It's founded on data. You look at the data of those and incomes, those individuals who have a bachelor's degree and what their income looks like. It's a lot higher than those who only have a high school degree or have a workforce credential. And so we know certain things to be true about the importance of higher ed. I think what we haven't always been honest about is what are the unintended consequences when you're pushing the lion's share of high school graduates to enroll in traditional higher ed without really another option that is kind of stamped and approved through a structured transition for a young person. And you see what's playing out right now, as you described earlier. A lot of young people are leaving traditional higher ed just to go make money. And I do think that the perception of higher ed is not quite what it was before. And so I think there's a lot of work ahead for school leaders, policymakers, elected officials, and heads of institutions of higher education, frankly, to come together and destigmatize vocational education and define more clearly what it is and what it isn't and what it shouldn't be, perhaps. There are certainly many career and technical education tracks within K-12 systems in our country, many of which I inherited in Camden, that are not good for kids, that are putting young people into low-wage, low-growth jobs. And that's a problem too. So, but I do think we have a lot of work to do to valorize. I use that word intentionally. I believe we need to valorize non-traditional pathways, and we need to stop stigmatizing them. And in fact, go a little bit further and talk about how they can actually lead to greater mobility, and it might be a better path for a lot of young people.
So Massachusetts has attempted to do this, at least in a couple of instances. They have established or reestablished a couple of high schools, one in Springfield and one in Worcester, Massachusetts. And the Pioneer Institute has done this study, which seems to say this is working. And as an independent observer who knows this world very well, do you agree with the, first of all, what are they doing at these new high schools or revamped high schools that the Pioneer Institute has identified as the new way to go with vocational education?
Yeah, Worcester Tech and Putnam Academy in Springfield, they have really changed their reputation. They've changed their model in a lot of ways. They have they built partnerships with local employers. They built new facilities, they have brought in new leadership, and there's also been changes in the way students are enrolled into their schools, and they become more of choice schools as opposed to the district school as a feeder into that vocational school. And so all of that come together, all those factors have come together to sort of create a new model in a way from where they started. I am somewhat familiar with these two schools from my role on the Massachusetts State Board of Education here, and I think that they should be applauded for their outcomes when you look at academically how their students are performing, and just the very fact that their reputations are now complete opposite of where they were. And so
facilities must be vastly better than what they used to be, with their new buildings and extra money for specific occupational training programs. So there must be a lot of, must be more fun to walk into this new school than it was to the older institution.
Yes, but I would posit that a new facility alone is not going to get you to the promised land. I've seen plenty of schools with new facilities to continue floundering as they were before. So clearly there's something happening inside of those schools that has led to families wanting to enroll their kids, and they get a lot more demand and they have seats. And so they should be applauded for that.
But there is a critique out there of these schools that I've heard from, it's not in this report by Pioneer, but others have raised this, that says, well, maybe they're just, you know, creaming the best students out of the community schools and out of the towns and communities or a surrounding area, so that really, they shouldn't be given quite as much credit for what they're doing as for how well they're recruiting students.
I was about to go there and say I've heard similar criticisms on the State Board of Education. Those concerns were brought to our attention. We actually voted to revamp the admissions process to make it more equitable, to make sure that there weren't any shenanigans in the way that students were admitted or counseled out inappropriately. And so I do think that's something that as policymakers we have to pay attention to. I also think there's a dynamic here where academically they are more college-oriented, traditional college-oriented than they were before. That's not a bad thing at all. That's a wonderful thing. At the same time, their mission was to deliver on connecting young people, similar to what we're talking about community colleges, to deliver their graduates ready and connected to local jobs. Some of those jobs require an associate or bachelor's degree, and so that's terrific if they're enrolling into traditional institutions of higher education. I've also heard some concerns that a lot of their students are just going into general studies programs and not necessarily coming back into the local labor market that they had ostensibly made connections to. So I think all of those things need to be taken together to understand what their impact is and what their impact isn't. But you can't question the fact that they've completely turned around the perception from the local community of the quality of education there. And they have legitimate partnerships with local employers and plenty of other initiatives in which young people are working in and around those companies.
So I guess there's sort of a dilemma here, because the better the program you create, the more effective your operation is, the more attractive you're going to be for students and families, and therefore the more likely your kids are going to be doing so well that maybe they just want to go into the four-year track, and really the vocational track isn't quite appropriate. So it's sort of a dilemma, isn't it?
It is. And by the way, this is not new to or specific to Massachusetts where it's playing out. We had the exact same situation in New Jersey where a handful of these vocational schools, they were run by the county, so separate and apart from the school district, where the vast majority of their students were just going to four-year colleges. And there was very, I can speak a little bit more definitively on Jersey, very little connection to actual local jobs. And they behaved like many charters that are often criticized by those who believe charters are creaming and still handpicking their students. I think that's a function of desperate families wanting to find a better option for their students. And so you can't fault them for that. But I do think it's fair to put a policy spotlight to say, or to ask, are they actually fulfilling their mission?
So looking forward, the news is not good. Everybody tells us that we're on the verge of a recession if we're not already in it. Financial problems are growing out there. And, does the future look a little grim?
Well,
for the employment, I mean, think of Propel America and its mission and the need to place kids. If the jobs start disappearing, what are the issues you're likely to face going forward?
Well, to this day, still, there is a gulf between how the public markets are reacting versus and certainly everything that's happening with rising costs and inflation and the labor market. There's a real gap between the two, if not a chasm. The labor market continues to boom. Like, the number of new jobs in the economy continues to go up, meaningful numbers. And we see that in our local partnerships. We're operating nationally across 5 different states right now. We cannot meet employer demand. So employers are hiring, wages have gone up, and at the same time, there's inflation and there's the public markets, and that's all real. But it's fascinating to see that on the employer side, for our young people, those jobs don't seem to be going anywhere anytime soon.
Well, that's great, and it's good to end on that happy note. So thank you very much, Payman. I appreciate your joining me today on the Education Exchange.
It's always a pleasure speaking with you.
I have been speaking with Payman Ruhanifard, former superintendent of schools in Camden, New Jersey, and co-founder of Propel America, a nonprofit dedicated to providing a second chance for young adults. Thank you for joining me on the Education Exchange. I am Paul Peterson. Please join me for our new podcast released on the Education Next website every Monday at noon Eastern Time.